It's hard to get your loved ones to change their habits, let alone change world history. But that's exactly what happened with apartheid.
A demonstrator has run right through the play.
Australians and millions of others took a stand and helped to bring the racist South African regime to its knees. I'm Sesonke Msimang, and join me for Boycott, the fight to end apartheid. ABC Rewind, Boycott. Search for ABC Rewind on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
The United States is decimating the radical Iranian regime's military in a way the world has never seen before.
The bombing campaign initiated by Israel and the United States against Iran has not been the quick, contained war the United States was hoping for. It quickly evolved into a regional conflict with global consequences. And the person directing America's strategy in the Middle East is the US Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth.
America is winning, decisively, devastatingly, and without mercy. And the results have been incredible. Historic, really. Only the United States of America could lead this. Only us.
Hi, I'm Annabelle Quince. In this Rear Vision, Pete Hegseth, one of the youngest Secretary of Defense ever appointed. Pete Hegseth admits that two things have defined his life: his military service and his religious faith. We look at both and ask how they might be shaping the decisions he's making today. He was born in 1980, the oldest child of Brian and Penny Hegseth, and he has two younger brothers. And according to Dave Phillips from the New York Times, there was nothing unusual about his upbringing.
He came from sort of a middle-of-the-road Christian family in the middle of the United States. Nothing that is particularly noteworthy in terms of it being really strident in his views. He went to Princeton University, which is one of the best schools in the United States. And there he was kind of a sort of a run-of-the-mill young conservative. Nothing that was all that different from very conservative-leaning people in the United States at the time.
But he was interested in the military, and he did join the Reserve Officer Training Corps program.
The Reserve Officer Training Corps, it's essentially what many, if not most, military officers go through while they're in college before joining the military full-time. And at the time, this is right before 2001, being in the military was fairly unusual at a place like Princeton University. And obviously, when 2001 happened, everything changed, and there was a good chance that he actually was going to see some action. I think that the young Pete Hegseth was a true believer in the military's claim that it could go into a place like Iraq, remove its leader, rebuild its society, and make it into a flourishing democracy. He was very outspoken about that. And what's interesting is in the next 10 years of his military career, once he was out of college, he basically had a front row seat to the failures of that policy in many different ways, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, over and over again. And he really came out a changed man.
When he graduated, Hegseth was a commissioned army officer and was deployed with the National Guard to Guantanamo Bay for 11 months.
Guantanamo Bay was set up as a place to put dangerous Islamic militants, try them for terrorism crimes, and hopefully have some swift justice. But what Pete Hegseth saw there, and he was just a very young officer leading a small group guarding the perimeter. But what Pete Hegseth saw there was not the swift justice I think he was hoping to see. He saw something that quickly devolved into sort of a stalemate where lawyers came in, they spent years literally fighting about the rules of how to try these suspects. And most of the people that were brought to Guantanamo never were convicted. Still to this day, some of them are still there. And so this young officer saw, okay, we built this thing and spent a lot of money, brought in people from all over the world to try and have some justice, and we achieved nothing.
His next deployment was in Iraq between 2005 and 2006.
He had gone to Guantanamo as a part-time soldier. And when he got back from that assignment, he went back to civilian life. He went into investment banking in New York City. But this is 2004, 2005. The war in Iraq, which military leaders had initially claimed would be over in a few weeks was getting worse and worse and more deadly. And Pete Hegseth, I think, saw he was needed, that maybe he had a chance to make a difference in a way that he didn't in Guantanamo Bay. And he volunteered to become a platoon leader in a rather dangerous part of Iraq.
And once he got there, what was his experience in Iraq?
I think just like Guantanamo, he got a front row view of frustration, of bad policy creating an even worse situation on the ground. So there were tens of thousands of American troops on the ground trying to create order, oftentimes because they were raiding houses and disrupting civilian life. They were only making more enemies of the Iraqis. At the same time, they were in real danger and didn't have a lot of ability to fight back because they couldn't see who the enemy was. He started to become a real firm believer that, look, we can't fight our way out of this problem. If we're going to make any peace in Iraq, it's going to have to be through winning over the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people. And so he volunteered to leave leading a infantry group and instead started working with local authorities, doing things like getting the water and the power turned back on, creating some order so that the people that were living in those places would have reasons not to fight. And I think he was really proud of that. But once he got back to the United States, put on his civilian clothes again, he saw that fall apart. After a surge of troops in 2007, 2008, the United States started to pull out troops quickly. Pete Hegseth really argued against that. In fact, during that time, he, for the first time, became kind of a public figure, going on to cable news shows and arguing, hey, don't pull out, support the troops, let's stay the course and help the Iraqis. But of course, that didn't happen. 2009, 2010, 2011, these troop numbers kept going down, and he essentially saw Iraq fall back into chaos.
After Iraq, Pete Hegseth has acknowledged that he had trouble settling back into civilian life and drank too much. He gravitated to a veterans organization called Veterans for Freedom and eventually became its president. Jane Meyer is an investigative journalist with the New Yorker magazine and has written about Hegseth's time at the Veterans for Freedom and another vets group called Concerned Veterans.
Vets for Freedom, as they called it. It was a tiny organization. One of the people I interviewed about it said it was what they call AstroTurf as opposed to natural turf. It was something that looked like a veterans group, but it was really fabricated. He was the spokesman, but it was a front group that was funded by a handful of billionaire national security hawks who wanted to keep the war going in Iraq because they wanted to win. They wanted the surge. And he became the spokesman for it. What was interesting to me when I was trying to figure out who Hegseth was, he ran it into the ground. He basically nearly bankrupted it. He had to get an emergency infusion of cash, again, from these billionaires, because there was no way that he was going to be able to pay the bills that he had run up there. I mean, he was hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And the people who were running this little organization eased him out. The word one of them used was they castrated him. They brought someone in over his head and took the control out of his hands because he was a terrible manager.
After he left Veterans for Freedom, Hegseth was deployed to Afghanistan to train Afghani officers.
So he essentially is a teacher, teaching Afghans how to be officers. And from what I've heard from people who served with him, he was good and he was dedicated. But this is in 2011. And once again, the United States is winding down, pulling out troops, shutting down programs. And so actually, I think just months after he leaves Afghanistan, this school where he worked is turned over to the Afghani army. And then it is shut down. So all of those efforts came to nothing. And again, once he was back home, Pete Hegseth saw what happened to the United States efforts in Afghanistan. They fell apart. The United States ended up essentially being forced out of there on airplanes in a very chaotic situation and achieving nothing.
I've been there. I've led troops in combat. I've been on patrol for days. I've pulled the trigger downrange.
heard bullets whiz by, flex-cuffed insurgents, called in close air support, led medevacs, and knelt before a battlefield cross. This is my life.
While Pete Hegseth makes a lot of his military service, he was a part-time soldier, and critics have questioned the extent of his service. Missy Ryan is a staff writer at The Atlantic.
Part-time soldier, a National Guardsman, America's weekend soldiers, as they can call them, those people did much more than would typically be expected of them during the Wars on Terror era. A lot was asked of them. That was kind of his entryway into sharing that same experience that people of his generation did. Most of them feel the wars didn't achieve much and they cost a lot in terms of blood and treasure. A lot of them also feel like there wasn't accountability for the leadership of failed decisions, the military leadership and the political leadership. And Hegseth is definitely among them. On the flip side of that, Hegseth's critics will say that because he was a part-time, not full-time soldier, and he left at the rank of major, that he has a lot less experience than the people who spent decades in uniform. It's a lively topic of debate among people in and around the military. What does his service and the kind of service and the extent of his service mean in terms of bringing it to his job? But he does refer to it a lot. And, you know, he did deploy and he did do more than most Americans, for sure. But he definitely brings that experience to the job in a very particular and a very pointed way.
What became clear, particularly when he took his next step, which was working for a slightly larger organization doing some of the same kinds of things, it was called Concerned Veterans for America. And it was a political advocacy group, again funded by different billionaires. This one was funded by the Koch brothers, Charles and David Koch. Concerned Veterans for America was a kind of a political front group that they had pushing for privatization of services for veterans. And Pete Hegseth became the sort of the head of it, the face of it. He was very handsome, articulate, had an Ivy League degree and had served these tours of duty in the military. And what happened was he again showed no skill at managing. In fact, he mismanaged the organization so badly that several of the people that he worked with finally wrote a couple whistleblower reports complaining. They said, among other things, not only was he mismanaging the money, he was inebriated often, so much so that he had to be carried off by other people who worked there because he couldn't walk and tucked into bed in hotels and had to be restrained from getting on the stage. And at one point, I think it was at a hotel bar in May of 2015, he and another person were incredibly drunk and jumping up and down and chanting, "Kill all Muslims, kill all Muslims." There were so many people interviewed in this whistleblower report, full of details, places, dates, specifics, describing Hegseth as having a serious alcohol problem. Eventually, he was pushed out of that organization, too, and forced to resign.
This is a Fox News alert. The president of the United States has just wandered over to talk to Pete Hegseth. Pete?
He sure did. Guys, I'm here with the president of the United States, Donald Trump. And what does this morning
his
mean to you?
His Fox News stint overlapped with him also running the second of these veterans groups. It started, I think, in about 2014. And it was really kind of a part-time job. He was a weekend host on Fox News, so not the highest status in the network, but a kind of a pretty face and getting a lot of attention for being really pugnacious and outspoken, criticizing particularly the laws of war.
I think he became more and more mistrustful of the leaders at the top. I think he still had a lot of faith and a feeling of duty towards enlisted people in the military that he had served with. And we really start to see that change in his civilian life when he joins Fox News around 2014. He starts just as a part-time weekend contributor, talking about this and that, all sorts of just sort of run-of-the-mill conservative issues, but also military issues. But he slowly morphs into somebody who really champions people who have been accused of war crimes by the United States. This is oftentimes ground troops who look and sound a lot like him. They've been accused of killing somebody that they thought was the enemy, but was not necessarily in uniform. And now they're being tried for murder back in the United States. And I think to Pete Hegseth, this felt really wrong, that people could fail at the level of a general or an admiral and get a medal, but people could make a bad call down at platoon level and be facing, you know, the rest of their life in prison. And so he really went to bat for these people. And he went to bat for people even when maybe the case wasn't very easily defended. There were a number of cases of people he stood up for where they had been turned in by their own men who had seen on the ground and understood the complexity of the situation, what had happened, and said, this was straight up murder. He killed someone. In one case, a Navy SEAL had stabbed to death an injured prisoner. His platoon was aghast and turned him in. That type of pattern of facts did not stop Pete Hegseth. I think that he really made a decision that he was going to stand by these folks no matter what. And I should say, it made great TV. These were very popular segments and got a lot of attention from his viewership, including one very key viewer, a big fan of Fox News, the President of the United States, Donald Trump.
At the very moment Pete Hegseth was attracting the attention of President Trump, his personal life was in turmoil. The drinking and emotional problems that had emerged after his three deployments still dominated his life. But then in 2018, he had a religious conversion.
His conversion to this very extreme form of fundamentalist Christianity, it took place after Hegseth's personal life really kind of hit the skids in a pretty dramatic way. Hegseth's first marriage fell apart when Hegseth had a child out of wedlock with the woman who became his second wife. But while he was married to his second wife, he had another child out of wedlock with the woman who became his current and third wife. And after that, Hegseth married his third wife, and they both became sort of devout followers of a very extreme conservative fundamentalist sect within the evangelical Protestant wing of Christianity in the United States.
Hegseth's church is part of the Communion of Reform Evangelical Churches, or CREC. Logan Davis is an investigative journalist and grew up in a CREC church and knows the pastor and theologist Doug Wilson, who is one of the church's leaders and a mentor to Pete Hegseth. So how typical is the CREC of Christian churches across America?
It is outside of the bounds of your standard American evangelicalism. But it's also a growing movement, and there are probably a few hundred thousand people in the country, if not more, who would affiliate with these same groups and churches.
And it has been linked to the idea of a sort of Christian nationalism. What does that mean, and what's the link?
When we talk about Christian nationalism, particularly in the contemporary American context, we're really, as simply as you can put it, talking about people who don't believe in a separation of church and state, and on some level believe that America is a fundamentally Christian nation, that our Constitution was in some way based on the Bible, and making the government follow the laws of God. I can understand where people arrive at those from, but those are, in fact, false assertions. Those are things that the Founding Fathers did not actually leave in the realm of opinion.
I think maybe around 2019, he becomes more overtly Christian. He starts getting Christian tattoos, and he starts talking more about his faith. And that has only advanced in recent years. At this point, he's sort of a very Christian and very outspoken person who will regularly praise Jesus during official remarks, who takes very sort of literal biblical values and tries to apply them to his life and I think to public policy too. He was not doing that when he was a young Fox contributor. And from my interviews with soldiers, he was not doing that when he was leading a platoon.
it is probably important to mention a guy here named Doug Wilson, or Douglas Wilson, is a pastor out of Moscow, Idaho. And he is a big figure in the Reform movement and a big figure in the classical Christian education movement, and is also, according to Hegseth, a personal mentor of sorts to him spiritually. Wilson does not believe that women should vote. He believes that they should let their husbands decide how their vote is used. He has come under fire repeatedly for mishandling sexual abuse in his congregation and other organizations he runs. But the thing that you will find probably highest in the results if you Google Doug Wilson or Doug Wilson controversy would be the years that he spent defending slavery, American slavery. I was taught that slavery was not as bad as it was made out to be, and that the South were the good guys in the American Civil War, which is not true. That to say, Hegseth is an acolyte of Wilson, who is this guy who has hung a lot of his credibility on defending not only slavery, but the Confederacy as this sort of more Christian, more inherently conservative version of America, that it would implicitly be better if they had won and that form of government were the form we have now.
Hegseth has written a book called American Crusade, and he has adopted some of the imagery of the, you know, the medieval crusades. He's got tattoos of the crusader's cross and the words Deus Vult, which was a phrase used by the crusaders when they took on the Islamic world in the Middle Ages. It's an odd form of Christianity. And the irony, I would say, is that in its outlook, it's not that different from the ideology that religious fundamentalism that Hegseth is so critical of in the Islamic world. It's very backwards, very basic, very, very bellicose. And he has adopted this as his outlook.
In 2024, when Donald Trump won the US presidential election, he nominated Pete Hegseth as Secretary of Defense.
Donald Trump has been busy naming his cabinet, but one appointment that's really raising eyebrows is Fox News host and Army veteran Pete Hegseth, who will become the Secretary for Defense.
I don't know if surprised by then is the word, because basically Trump's cabinet is filled with people who have come from places like Fox News, whose main credential is that they look good on television. So he fit the bill. I mean, and Trump often, when he was talking about who he picked for his cabinet, he would say, oh, they were from central casting. So how they looked and sounded was important to him. What was certainly true was there's never been a defense secretary remotely as unqualified in terms of his experience as Pete Hegseth is to run the Pentagon.
Pete Hegseth was really grilled in this hearing on Capitol Hill today about his suitability for the role of defense secretary and also about his past conduct, his alcohol consumption. And he was pushed on comments that he'd made in the past that women shouldn't serve in combat roles. He now says that they should be allowed to do so as long as standards aren't changed to accommodate them.
He almost did not get confirmed. It was really touch and go. A lot of what concerned the senators who would have to give him the vote was his drinking. I mean, there was a great concern that they would be putting the most powerful military in the world in the hands of someone who had a history of being accused of being an alcoholic, chronically so. And Hegseth basically had to promise not to drink anymore. He said no alcohol would touch his lips while he ran the Pentagon.
While he was eventually confirmed by one vote, his first months in the office were somewhat tumultuous.
A former Pentagon spokesperson, John Illiott, says the department is in disarray under the leadership of Trump appointee Pete Hegseth. The comments come amid reports Mr. Hegseth sent classified military information to a second chat group containing his wife, brother, and personal lawyer. This comes just a month after a US journalist was added to a Signal group chat where US cabinet officials discussed plans to strike Houthi rebels in Yemen.
He made a number of critical mistakes. He brought in some of his longtime friends from his previous job running a small veterans organization to act as his advisors, and then very quickly got rid of them, accusing them of leaking to the press. By the way, I don't think any evidence that they did leak anything actually has ever been made public. He also accidentally, apparently, was giving classified information to a group of people who weren't supposed to access it through a group chat on his phone. There was all sorts of sort of rookie mistakes.
Today, with this executive order, you will authorize the current Secretary of Defense and the current Department of Defense to once again be named the Secretary of War and the Department of War.
He has worked hard to roll back all sorts of diversity initiatives, forcing more than 4,000 people out of the military because they're transgender. He has fired top leaders that he sees as people who are hired because of their race or gender. And he has been very outspoken saying, like, look, we are going back to a very sort of traditional image of the military. He's questioned whether women, who make up a huge part of the force, are qualified to be in combat positions. He is trying to change things. And in some cases, he's having some very real effect.
About 2 weeks ago, Douglas Wilson presented a sermon at the Pentagon for top military brass. To be clear, the man who thinks that women should not be allowed to vote and that slavery was good was brought into the Pentagon to speak to the upper echelons of our military. It is clearly already extending the influence. Whether or not it extends the shelf life or makes it a more popularly known thing, those fingers are already working themselves into places they were not before.
There are people now suggesting that these more radical Christian ideas can be seen in the current war against Iran.
There's certainly been a number of complaints lodged by people in the military, servicemen, saying they feel they're being conscripted into what is being described to them by their superior officers as a holy war. It is true that Hegseth brought his pastor in to do a prayer service. It was not required that everybody attend, but it was there.
I don't want to overstate it. And of course, we can't know Pete Hegseth's heart, but you look at the last six or seven U.S. presidential administrations. There have always been a faction that wanted to hit Iran, wanted to invade Iran. And there has always been a Secretary of Defense who was like, you know what's going to happen if we do that? The Strait of Hormuz gets closed, regional instability spirals out. Now we have a Secretary of Defense who believes that we should take the war to Islam, who has not, for the first time, stopped the president from launching a war against the Islamic Republic. And we are seeing the consequences. I don't know what happened in those meetings, but I do know what Pete Hegseth believes about Islam, Christianity, America, and Iran. And I know that we never made this mistake before. We've made many other catastrophic mistakes, but we never did this because it was so obviously a strategic disaster.
I wasn't sure when he came in how his experience in Iraq and Afghanistan was going to affect him. I thought that maybe he would be almost a non-interventionist, someone who had watched a generation fight wars that achieved nothing and who would therefore be hesitant to fight wars. And President Trump seemed like he might be a good partner for someone like that. But I think what we see is the two together, it's not that they're against war. It's just that they're against this style of putting large numbers of troops on the ground and trying to take over and rebuild a society. They're not interested in that. But what they've shown they are interested in is using all of the firepower of the United States to strike from afar, to destroy things that they feel are obstacles to their policy goals, and then just let the pieces fall where they may.
Dave Phillips from the New York Times. Today's other guests, investigative journalist Logan Davis, Missy Ryan from The Atlantic, and Jane Meyer from The New Yorker magazine. Many thanks to the sound engineer, Mickey Grossman. I'm Annabelle Quince, and this is Rear Vision.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.